Welcome to the Edinburgh City Supporters Club podcast. We hope you enjoy the show. Yeah!
Well, hello everybody and welcome to the latest edition of the very unofficial Edinburgh City Supporters Club podcast. I am your host again, the Right Reverend Bobby Love. And as ever, I am joined by Citizen Neil, Mr. Rooney. How are we doing?
Yeah, very well, thanks. Good to have another pod.
Have we recovered from our trip to the Belfield last night?
No. I'm suffering. Probably didn't help that I caught last orders in my local pub, which might be a post-game pub. But I caught last orders and drunk too many Red Stags and Coke, and I was working this morning. So, as you do, you forget how sweet that stuff is. You're like, oh, it's actually all right. And then you have to put a wee bit more coke in. And I'm like, oh, no. So, yeah, needless to say, I was a bit tender this morning.
A bit tender. But at least the Belfield pints tasted nicer.
They did taste, they tasted excellent, yes, they did.
That's good eye, good eye. For those that haven't seen, Rooney gave us a small shot on the Supporters Club Twitter. Pints were looking very nice. And also, as ever, joining us is Mr. Monks himself, Ali Moncrief. How are we today on this lovely Sunday evening?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely grand, guys. Just look at my face on the thing. I've got a bit of sunburn from today, so there you go. That's not very, which is real. But apart from that, not absolutely grand. Yeah, glad we've got a chance to have a game to chat about, because it didn't look like it for a while last week. So yeah, no, I'm delighted with this season. For all its issues, it's dragging on a little bit longer and might be a nice conclusion yet.
Yep, fingers crossed, and that's what we'll get on to. In terms of your sunburn, I read a story in today on the Edinburgh Live website about an Edinburgh resident who managed to sunburn their face in 7-degree heat up at Edinburgh Zoo. So you're not alone for going out, because you've probably not been out in a year in the southern Scotland.
I know.
Roof, pink. No tan, nothing else, pink.
No.
Anyway. Right, back pretty much a little bit quicker than usual, citizens. We thought we'd do a kind of playoff special preview pod, whatever you want to call it, just to kind of get things going for that. As Ali says, we've managed to extend our season, and that came thanks to a win over two legs against Elgin City. First leg up there, a 1-0 win. Josh Campbell scored a rather good goal after a lovely Uzi assist. Pretty much he stuck his foot in it, slammed off him, the defender, and then broke the Campbell. or as Uzi told you, an amazing assist. Brilliant. How do we think that one went, Ali?
I thought we were, certainly first half we were really poor. I know we went in 1-0 up at half-time, but Elgin could feel... I'm not saying they can feel hard done by, because they should have taken advantage of how superior they were in that first half. I don't know. I don't think we moved the ball well at all. We barely, we normally do pop the ball about quite nicely. Players that are brave on the ball, keep possession. The pitch looked quite dry and quite bumpy. I don't know if that had an impact or not, or whether it was just players' nerves, but we were really, really poor first half, like genuinely. Could it be, if we were 2-0 down, we had nothing to complain about. Yeah, like Uzi did well to close play down, and the ball broke to Josh. I think he should have squared it, if I'm honest. I think he was actually a wee bit selfish. I know he scored, but if he hadn't, then I think Naismith would have gone absolutely through him for it, because I think the ball was to put it back to Uzi. But, fair play. So second half, we were much better. It looked a bit more confident. We were a bit more aggressive without playing particularly well. And then, riding a Carl Mantell save late on, maybe 90th, 91st minute, something like that from Kane Hester, which gave us that advantage. But the first half was a concern, I have to say. And our record's so good against Elgin. I think that's now 11 games, I think, unbeaten against them. But that was one of our poorest performances. So it was more of a relief, that first leg, I think, to get over than anything else. We were obviously such a great position to be, come back to Ainslie Park with a 1-0 lead, but it just was relief rather than any real sense of joy, to be honest with you, because I thought we were pretty poor.
Yeah, I've got to agree with that. Just watching the first half especially was probably our poorest half under Naismith. I thought we didn't look particularly at it. It looked really jittery. Kane Hester had two or three shots blocked by either Hamilton or Rad Mack. Going forward, nothing was sticking at Uzi. Josh Campbell hadn't had a great game. You're right about squaring it. I think Grant Murray said in the post-match interview that he had that he's like, he really should have squared it. So that's the thinking it was on the bench. So, I thought we did well to kind of get out. We played a little bit better in the second half, a bit more kind of cohesive. I looked a bit better with the ball going forward, but it wasn't our best performance. And as I said, I think, like I said on Twitter, like the first time I'd seen Naismith absolutely lose the place at the team, there was just a wee glimpse of him in the second half. I can't remember if it was maybe just before Antel had that save, and you think he just chucked a water bottle or something. There was something going on at the side. He was absolutely furious with whatever had happened. And I said to Rooney, I said, that's the first time I've seen Gary properly like lose it at this team so far. I mean, he might have done it in other games. It's just that was the one that was really, really obvious. Rooney, we watched it together. What did you think?
It was pretty rubbish, to be honest. But I don't want to sound like I'm being really critical, but certainly levelled up in the second half. It was a bit... At this time of year, it's... As long as you get through, it doesn't really matter. You know what I mean? It could be... I know we're going to move on to future games, but we could scrape 1-0 on a 0-0 and be delighted. You know what I mean? It's just all about getting a result at this time of year. It's not... It's almost cup football, isn't it? It's not... It doesn't matter about your performance. If you're battling and not for the want of trying, and the guys were trying, it just... Like Ali says, the pitch is maybe a lot of thing. It's a long way to go. And we've had Rab on. Rab was like, I'll not look forward to going back to Elgin and not having a shower and then coming back down the road and that. You know what I mean? They've got all that stuff to deal with. It's 1-0, delighted. It made up for it for being absolutely stinking. And you know, it was a good goal. I wasn't thinking of the squaring, but to be honest, I thought it was just a good finish. So obviously I'm quite easily pleased.
although I said you maybe should have squared that as a sort of former poacher myself at times. That's exactly why. Although I can hear Elliot shouting, if he listens, my pal, he says, what would you went near post? But that's really what strikers do. They're quite selfish. Anyway, so on to the second leg. 2-2 at Ainslie Park. First half, McCardy scored, causing like loads of issues with like Elgin themselves caused loads of issues with crosses into the box. We just didn't deal with them at all well. McCardy is an absolute handful at the best of times, and it's so proved by scoring really early doors. And I think everybody, I know you were particularly pessimistic in the group chat, Ali, where that's it kind of idea. although to be fair, long term City fans, we've seen this skip before, eh? So aye, so it kind of went there. Danny scored a good goal. It was a nice little play for Danny Jardine to Tomo and his cross found handling. He popped it in. McCardy again popped up. A bit more kind of poor defender. He's kind of left a mark to head it in. 2-1 down. Obviously, Gary's had a considerable amount to say at half-time. Because the first half performance was dire. That's maybe a bit too hard.
We played no, it was.
After they scored. No. And then we scored, and then we played poor again. So for about a 5-10 minute spell, we were okay, and the rest of it was poor. Yeah. Second half, it looked a lot better. The heavens absolutely opened, and we seemed to adjust to the conditions a bit better, I think. We were on the front foot quite a lot. And then obviously Josh comes up with that absolute wonder strike. I mean, just looking back at the technique, everyone, just the way he plants his foot and everything, it was like, you knew it was going in. He was sort of already celebrating before he went in. Gary said in his interview, he said, we weren't sure from our angle where it was, but he said that James McDonough was at the balcony. He said, as soon as it left his feet, you know it was on. So it was just one of those ones. Absolute perler. Deserved, maybe harsh to say on Elgin, but a goal to be fit to win any tie. We watched that together, Rooney. What do you think?
I think on the night, probably a 2-2, we probably just shaded the draw. If we had won it, it would have been a bit of a steal. Elgin were pretty good, but you could tell that they've, we spoke about, what was it, the 5 or 6 games that they've played the same starting 11.
Aye.
You know, the guys are going to be struggling a wee bit. Who's right or who's wrong, you know what I mean? You know, for rotating or not rotating. The Tinker Man done it well and things like that. But, to be fair, I did fear the worst when they started because we were like, Elgin are having a go here. And we're like, oh, wait a minute. This isn't in the script. But it was settled down a wee bit in the second half, probably. Hopefully, one of the young team having a quiet word in Naismith's ear before half time. Maybe that encouraged them after his pre match conference, saying that he was away with the garage crew, and it's the first time he's had stick off them to somebody at half time. So it wasn't very impressed. So I hate to think what he's going to be like when Ali goes back into the ground to make it.
He's going to have to hope that the dugouts are at the opposite end of the stand than they used to be.
But to be fair, though, that doesn't make a difference because he's still here. So, and then it was quite funny watching that last goal because I was like 20 seconds ahead of you, and then you were like 20 seconds ahead of your mate Elliot. In fact, I think Elliot was like a minute behind me. So I tried not to cheer. I just put my hands up, and then Bob started cheering. And Elliot's like, yeah, that's a good tackle on the halfway line. I can see why he's celebrating. And then it went in, and we're like, Elves, it's kicked off again. So it was
put your hands up, and I thought you'd been like this. Oh, no. And I was like, oh, just missed something. They've scored or something. And then it was like, Campbell, whop. And that was me. I lost the place of the house plan. Everyone was gone. I was skating over the floor, sliding everywhere. I was doing official tweets for the club, the match updates. I could barely hold my phone. I was so shaking with excitement in that. I was like, I need to update that it was a goal, but I could barely hold my phone. And then after we scored the goal, I was like, that's it. There's nowhere updates unless there's a goal somewhere because I just can't physically do it.
You know, we looked better in the second half and looked like we were going to force the game better in the second half. We seemed to maybe adjust to them a bit better in the second half, but first half was a bit of a worry, and hopefully that's maybe the worst half we're going to have, because that was probably worse than the first half at Elgin up there. You know what I mean? It was kind of like they'd just gone, right, well, and quite rightly so, we probably would have had to do the same. If we were getting beat, you have to have a goalie. You kind of just feel your way into the game, and as you see how it goes, you just have to go and unsettle the team and have a go at them. So, yeah, good to get through. Good to 2-2.
Ali?
Yeah, it was, I think it was probably a really, really good game for a neutral to watch, or just anyone who'd bought the stream, you know, and wanted to watch the game, because, you know, it was obviously really finely balanced, and Elgin were... I thought we were too passive at the start. Naismith said in his post-match that the plan was to go and attack, but I don't know if Elgin just pushed us back, or there was maybe a bit of doubt in the players' minds about, you know, 1-0. So it's a funny position to be in, but I do think we're at our best on the front foot, you know, no doubt about it. And Elgin, for whatever reason, we were in the first half. And it is a concern, especially with, you know, I think it was probably Rab that lost McCarty on both goals, certainly in the second one. Didn't get anywhere near him at all. And Elgin are a big physical team, and every time there's a corner, you were flapping. When their goalie went up for the corner in the last, they were over extra time and extra time, you know, when the goalie went up, I could barely watch. Like, I honestly could barely watch. It's probably the least I've ever enjoyed a game of football. It just didn't feel... It just had the feeling on those nights where it wasn't going to go our way. And I think that was probably because I felt the defence was really vulnerable to a corner or to a delivery, because they were physically way ahead of us. I probably would have stumped Josh off, because I thought he made a lot. I thought he was really poor. I think Josh has been tremendous for us, just been absolutely brilliant. And he's obviously got that in his locker. But I thought he had a really poor game. I thought he was snatching at things. He had a couple of shots from stupid distances that he blazed over. A couple of really poor decisions. But, yeah, it was a moment of... I think he's probably one of the best strikers of the ball I've seen in the loan. Since City came up into the SPFL or into League Two, I don't remember any player striking the ball as cleanly as Josh Campbell does. And he does it on his, you know, does it on his left foot as well. And it was just an absolutely remarkable goal. Such a good hit. And it was one of those ones that looked... It was, the camera angle was good on it. The fact that it was pouring rain was good. You know, the fact that it was at night under the floodlights, so it was kind of like when you watch the highlights back yesterday, it was like a really aesthetically pleasing goal, not just in terms of the quality of the strike, but in terms of the way that everything else was set up. But you know what, maybe second half, I think over the two legs, we probably played about a half of good football, I think, to be honest with you, over the 108 minutes, which somehow was enough to to get us through. And that's probably down to the individual quality of the players that we've got. Like, we do have guys like Josh and Danny. And in fairness to Danny, I thought he was really good. I thought he worked really hard. I thought his link-up play was good. I think his touch was good. And he deserved his goal. Obviously, he didn't get man of the match, but I don't know what that poor boy has to do to get man of the match, to be honest with you. But I know he's mentioned that before. He's very much aware of it. But I think, you know, we do have real individual quality within the team, and that was just enough to see us through. But that was a tight one. I have to say, I know we're going to come on to Dumbarton. This is the route I would have wanted for us for the playoffs. If someone could have said to me, you know, a few weeks ago, what's the ideal scenario? It was Elgin, and then Dumbarton would be for me. Our record against Elgin is tremendous, and I think Dumbarton are probably a team on a bit of a downward spiral. I wouldn't have fancied up us against Stranraer or anything like that, or even Stirling Albion, who didn't make the playoffs. But a great moment, and we should talk about it. One of the few really great moments we've had at Ainslie Park, I think, at Josh Campbell going. None of us have obviously been able to see it, which I know we'll touch on very briefly at the end. But yep. Bye. Delighted to be through. Delighted.
Got to be delighted. Any way to get through just makes it. As I said, like a strike really win any game. In terms of the Danny, because obviously the other Danny won the man of the match for the supporters club. I thought both of them are absolutely magnificent on. Yeah. When was it Thursday?
Yeah.
Thursday night.
Yeah.
Tuesday night. Tuesday night. Other days are million into one. On Tuesday night. Like we said in the last pod as well, Danny Jarlin's like a different player since he moved in the middle. I thought he showed some really nice touches. The way he kind of took that ball for a wee walk before he passed to Tomo for Handlin's goal was great. He was just, everything good seemed to come through him. In terms of kind of, like you said, it must have been a good game for the neutral. I know there was a few people, media types and all that maybe hadn't been to a game this season. They're like, this is one of the best games I've seen all season. So in terms of like, if you're a neutral, you must have really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
No, like the three of us were probably all sitting watching it going, no, not again. Every time Elgin went running up the park, it was like, no. But aye, we've got to the final where we have Dumbarton. Now, as you said, I think everybody would have probably rather had Dumbarton. Certainly, I was glad we avoided Stirling Albion because he seemed to be a bit of a bogey team this year, certainly, and I have been always difficult games against them. Stranraer's difficult to go to, especially the long trek, which would have been tomorrow night if they'd got through. I must confess, I don't know a massive amount about Dumbarton. I know they've got a few players that kind of stuck out for me. I think we said that before we came on. Ross Forbes, obviously quite experienced, been about, generally seems to be a good player. Robin Omar used to play for Elgin, who Craig Thompson's well acquainted with. The last time I went up to Elgin was a 3-3 draw, and the two of them were like trying to boot lumps at each other the entire match. I'm pretty sure it got to the point where we ended up in a two falls and a submission situation, and the referee had to boot them each before they got anywhere any further. It was just one of those games. And Wedderburn as well, that plays for them, because I remember watching him for them film a couple of other teams. It'll be a tough game. I'm not expecting anything easy. I'm not expecting a lot of football getting played either, to be honest. It's going to be a tetchy two games, I think. Ali, what do you think?
Yeah, so when you were done about it, I'd listened to one of their fans was on the terrace with Craig Telford and Sean Wayne. So I listened to that actually just the other day, which was good to get his insight on it. He's the guy who does the co-coms for them. The first six games until he saw a goal to commentate on a goal. He'd never done it before. So he'd never done the co-coms before. So it got to like the sixth or seventh game or whatever until he was actually able to commentate on a goal. So it gives you an idea. Like, I think obviously they've got Duffy in as a manager, and Jim Duffy's one of these guys who's got maybe a bit of an overblown reputation in Scottish football. He's obviously got a lot of pals in the media. I think Chick Young was touting for the Scotland job not that long ago. And like, I generally think he was. I don't think he's getting that anytime soon. The idea seems to be that Duffy will move on irrespective of what happens here, and I think that will suit everyone by all accounts. Dumbarton are a club who, you know, four or five years, maybe in the Championship with the best part-time team in the country for a while. But, you know, when teams start to fall and go on a downward spiral, we've just seen Brechin, you know, Cowan Beef before they had a couple of relegations in a row. Brechin have got not quite three in a row, but kind of did really, you know, it's only COVID that really saved them, that's really going to save them from it, and they'll lose to Kelly Hearts, of course, I would imagine. It just feels like Dumbarton, from everything I've read and from what we've said, that they are a club that's in a really difficult place. There's a change of ownership. So we've got new ownership in now, but there's an architect's practice involved and some financier from Malaga or something like that. There's some interesting, basically, I think Dumbarton's stealing from what everyone says. You know, people were, the previous owners of Dumbarton, it was a property deal for them. They want to sell, you know, where the stadium is, the Rock, you know, okay, that's all fallen through. And I think that's caused some issues. So the investment isn't there at the moment. Scored 15 goals last season, or during the season, which is, I had to check that a couple of times to make sure it was correct. Three of them were in one game against Peterhead as well. But for all they only scored 15 goals, they didn't finish bottom of the league, and actually they weren't cut adrift either. Like, until the last game or so, they could have gone, if Clyde hadn't beaten East Fife, you know, it would have been Clyde that we would have been in this. So they're obviously not getting battered every week. You know, they're not in a, you know, they're not getting hammered, because they must be sticking in games. By all accounts, they are a very, very direct side, a very, very physical side. You know, if there's a free kick on the halfway line, the two centre-halves go up to compete for it in the box and things like that. So we will have to be aware of that. I know Balotelli struggled with injuries and fitness kind of getting back in, but I think we have to have Conrad in just for his reading the balls coming into the box. You know, Rab struggled under the high ball against Elgin. I think it would be the same against Dumbarton. You know, you also want Lee Hamilton to come in and make sure he plays well as well. For me, we've just got to go out and attack them. We've got to go out and be really, really on the front foot. They've only scored 15 goals this season. If we can get ahead of them, if we can get a goal up, you know, that their heads are going to be down. You can imagine what it's like playing the whole season with barely scoring, and then to go, oh, we've got to get two now. We've got to get two to get back in this. I think we're best when we're on the front foot. We've got guys in the team, whether it's Josh, whether it's Danny, either Danny, whether it's Uzi, that can break down. Maybe it's a game for Blair if the team's going to sit, if Dumbarton are going to sit deep. Maybe it's a game for Blair Henderson, actually. And let's just try and get balls in around him in the box, because you know how often the ball falls for him, he gets in a good position. Maybe that's better than Uzi, who's nicked a bit of space to run into. But looking at the squads, looking at the form, we should beat Dumbarton. We really should. I know it's a difficult thing, but this is the best chance we will have to get up. You know, Kelly Hearts will win the league next year, spending big money. This is our great chance to get up. We should go out and we should really push at them. And I think we will. I think we'll go up.
Yep, Rooney.
How do you top that? To be fair, the only time I've seen them, they played Aberdeen in the sort of Scottish Cup, and I've seen some of that. It didn't look that bad. You know what I mean? So, Jim Duffy and his world book of how to play football amazes me all the time, how he keeps getting jobs. But a bit like Sam Allardyce, I guess. A poor man, Sam Allardyce. but yeah, I don't know. I kind of agree with you on, we need another centre-half in to play centre-half. No disrespect to that, but he's better playing other places.
Yeah.
Even playing left-back than playing at centre-half, you know, needs muster now, if it's ideal. If Conrad can play and last, unless they've got a couple of really quick boys that run over the top, then you wouldn't be wanting them. No offence to the guy, but you never wanting to play him there. So, it, you know, it depends on that, I suppose. But then you play Rab further up. You've got that out ball all the time. You know, it's a good out ball. It's a good outlet. But, yeah. As I said before with the first two games, it comes down, it's results. It's not performances. It's great rolling your sleeves up. Roll your socks up, get wired in. And if everybody's got blood, sweat and tears all over their face and going 1-0 in the first game, you'd be happy days. You just go and do it again for another 90 minutes and it's there, you know what I mean? Your tails will be up a wee bit. But I am looking forward to it, because it'll be good. Just gutting that we can't get there, which I'm sure we'll come on to when we want to have a moan. But I think as the three of us will sit collectively to watch a game in the same space and breathe the same air for the first time tomorrow night. I can see us probably at points are sitting around as a group of eight or nine holding hands because we're going to be that worried about it. So, I can't imagine. We might be the only guys in the pub as well, apart from the barmaid. Yeah. So should the manageress, so she'll probably be telling us to shut up now and again when we're clearing at the telly or whatever. But it's going to be tight. It's going to be sticky. I would hope we've got enough quality. We, you know, Josh Campbell's, Danny, I love him, one Hanlon, Uzi, you know, Danny Jardine's twin is unbelievable. You know, whoever he plays with, Blackie and Matt Laird or whoever, I would just hope we've got enough quality to go forward and tuck them off. And Blair, you know, it's maybe made for him to come back in and just to give Uzi a, you know, a rest. As much as Uzi's been excellent, you know, do you pick the man in form? Uzi looked like a wee bit tired playing the other night. Maybe the few days rest has probably helped them. You bring Blair back in and play him, or you maybe play him for one game and play Uzi for the other game. You know what I mean? If it's going to be like home and away, we would expect to have more of the ball at the home game. So play Blair and then play Uzi away for home when he does more running over the top. Oh, it'll be tight. Yeah. I'm optimistic, but I maybe don't sound it. But I'm definitely optimistic. There's not masses of difference when you take, and I say this sincerely, but like you take Hearts out of it because Hearts are full time and spending millions. You know, to go from maybe taking them out, you maybe look at Dundee and Inverness, say that through gritted teeth, but you maybe look at those two and then the rest, Dunfermline in a degree, maybe beat Dunfermline 2 years ago. There's not much on a one-off game or a cup style game that you would fancy your chances against most teams. So yeah. I'm sure we'll be fine. We'll be sitting here in a week's time, champagne, party hats and streamers. Again, the galore. Yeah. We maybe have some jelly and ice cream with the Celtic fans thing, and we'll see how we go.
Well, I think we'll see. I think you're right. I think you're both like saying it's maybe a chance to go at them in the first leg at home. We have been better with Naismith going forward. Once we get at it and we go at it, we look really good because we've got some really good ball players, like you say, like Josh and the Dannys and so on. Whereas when it was under James McDonough, we were probably better defensively. Yeah. So it's kind of one of those ones. I think you're right that we need to get going. You're probably right with the centre-half position. I was kind of half wondering, I don't know if I mentioned it in the group chat, that maybe they were holding Liam out for the semi for the final. So I wonder if Liam's going to come back. Then we could have Liam Henderson and Lee Hamilton as your two centre-halves, which has probably been our best pairing of the season. Maybe it's more hope than anything else. Because like we said a few pods ago, I don't know what James said to Liam about a year and a half ago, but he's absolutely transformed in that time, and he's easily probably the best centre half in the league by a long way. I think he's been absolutely magnificent the last 18 months, and you can tell he's a loss when he doesn't play. Yeah. And I mean, and that's not a knock on Rab or anything like that, because pretty much he's played everywhere we could ever ask him to play. But he's not a centre-half, and he knows he's not a centre-half either. He plays better on the left. He tends to, and I think Callum Crane, when Rab's in front of him, plays better as well, because he knows if he goes forward, Rab will drop back and vice versa and so on. Like, they've got a really good understanding together. And as good as Josh and Callum have been at times on the left, it's not quite the same. There's maybe not quite that understanding that kind of goes with Rab and Callum together, because Rab is fundamentally a left back and he's just playing a wee bit further forward. I'm saying nothing about, I'm not making any predictions. You know, I've seen this before. You know, I'm not going down that road again. I'll sit in the fence. I'm not going to make anything. As I said in my notes, I says they've got 15 goals all season. Our defence isn't particularly rock-like over the last few games. I can't remember. I think we've only kept one clean sheet since Gary came in. Is that right? One, two, maybe?
Mm-hmm. We kept one at Stranraer, did we not?
Aye, Stranraer and Elgin in the first leg, was it?
Right.
Oh, and Stirling have been away, so it's three.
Yeah.
But it's no huge amount, I don't think. I'm expecting it to be a wee bit, I don't know, more experienced. We expect Willie Kier up, wee cute fouls and all that kind of thing. But we're just going to have to get through it. But, I mean, we've got a lot of experienced players there. Like you said, Conrad, Danny Handlin, these type of guys, they're all going to have to show their experience and not get caught up and just keep to their game plan. And hopefully we can get through. Because I think you're right. I think it's our best chance we've had since we got promoted to get promoted.
Yeah.
And it'd be a lovely cheery bye to Spartans if we were to get promoted. Before we go back to Meadowbank. But is it like I was listening to the Edinburgh Football Podcast with Andrew Stobie and that, and they were saying, like, the first game in the long league was at Meadowbank, our first game in League Two was at Meadowbank. It'd just be a nice bit of symmetry if our first game in League One was also at Meadowbank.
Yeah.
So maybe there's some omens in there. I don't know. Rooney will tell you I'm really superstitious at times. So maybe there's something in there. I don't know. Fingers crossed. We'll have to see. So that's kind of covers the games. I got a wee bit here saying key players, which probably isn't too hard to guess who we think the key players are. But if you want to have a go, Ali, if you want to pick anybody you fancy, on you go.
Key players for us or key players for them?
Us. You can pick for them if you will. Like, why not? Have a go for them, because I haven't got a clue. If you've got any key players for them as well, that'd be good.
The centre-half, Ryan McGeever, is very good. I would say he's good. Whoever goes up against him, I think will have a difficult couple of games. I think key guys for us, you know, if that team if they do sit deep and they do try and you just win two cities. Like I said, I think the key for us is being attacking, going at them. Liam Brown's got enough in his locker to just turn away from somebody. You saw a controlled shot from the halfway line, you know. On Tuesday night, he's got that kind of thing in his locker. He's got those little turns, those little touches that interplay with him and Jardim. That sometimes is how you break down a really packed defence, rather than trying Hollywood balls all the time or trying to get things in. If you can just get the ball moving quickly around a deep defence, and we've got the players that can do that. Not many teams do at this level, but you just saw little hints of it, little flicks from guys like either Danny, Liam. So I think it's that area there for me is the key. If we can just get the ball moving really quickly around their deep line players. And then we've got the players to do it, so we shouldn't be scared of trying to do that kind of stuff. You know, if they're going to let us, they're going to sit back, which it does seem like based on everything this season, let's go and take it then. Let's go and see what our really good players can do, because they're good enough. Liam Brown's far too good for League Two, simple as that. You know, he could be playing the Championship, but I don't think there's any doubt about it for me anyway. So, I think somebody like Liam, a little bit of creativity in the middle, I think would be the key for me.
Yep, Rooney.
Yeah, it comes back to the old Dennis Bergkamp comparison. You need somebody to unlock the door. I think that's what it's going to come down to. You know what I mean? You need somebody who's going to be really cute in there that's just going to have something, a sprinkling of magic, a wee bit of gold dust in there. And you know, whether it'll be Josh, Danny, or the other Danny, or, you know, young boy DeVita that we've got, whether he comes on and, you know, he can maybe do something different as well, even if it's just that wee pass, you know, I think that's going to be the key. You know, just in Dumbarton haven't scored many goals, but, you know, as Ali said, they're not being cut adrift, or, you know what I mean? They didn't look terrible. I think, you know, they've been quite... He's probably turned it, went in there, Duffy, how long he's been there, I don't know, but he's certainly made them hard to beat, you know, for them not to finish bottom and only scoring 15 goals says a lot, so... I'd be one of our front guys that, a sprinkling of magic that'll do it. Whether it is, and I'd imagine it will be the guy who plays off through the middle, whether that's Danny Hamlin or whether it's Josh playing through the middle off the striker. If Gary, you know, plays his 4-2-3-1, that'll be the key for me.
Aye. I'll take it slightly further back. If Mark Laird is fit, that could be a massive difference for us. I think we all know he just brings a bit of different to the team. The team looks really comfortable when he's there. He's comfortable on the ball. Everything that Mark Laird does, he just looks with ease.
Yeah.
you know, so it'll depend if he's got a wee bit left in his legs. Obviously, Ali's mentioned Liam Brown, so because Danny Handlin, if he listens to this, will be going potty, I'll mention him. another one that can open it up, he's played really well since the restart, I think, as we said in the last pod, his role's a bit more defined and he seems to be kind of working at both ends of the pitch. And as we saw on Tuesday, he still has that wee bit of magic that he can do to kind of turn the game. Though I would say possibly my key player, maybe Callum Antle. He saved us numerous times this season, to be absolutely honest. I think, as we've said before, admittedly, when he started, he looked a bit shaky, but over the last 2 or 3 years, he's really come into a really, really good game. I mean, that save up in Elgin was brilliant. He had a really good save late on last Tuesday, when he kind of dived and pammed it around the post. Had a magnificent save against Stirling Albion. So I think Callum could be, if it's as you expect, and maybe Dumbarton don't attack like they have been, it's going to take all his concentration to make sure that if anything does come his way, he's ready and he's set. And I think so far he's kind of shown that. Maybe I had one wee mistake a couple of weeks ago, but we can probably forgive him considering how much he's kept us in games the last wee while. So aye, maybe Callum. So aye, that kind of covers the games. Probably gets to the biggest talking point that isn't a game. The dates were moved so we could get fans back in.
And now we're going to sit in the pub.
Now we're all going to sit in the pub instead because we're not allowed in. Obviously, like, without going too much into operational details, that's probably the best way to say it. Obviously, we spoke to the club. We know the club worked pretty hard to get fans into the ground. It's the restrictions don't give you a massive amount of leeway. As far as we're led to believe, when you read the actual restrictions online, it's 500 seated maximum or 250 standing maximum.
Which is what, you know, when I phoned you, we didn't think it was. I originally thought it was a bit of both. I didn't realise it was one or the other. Which one?
Yes.
Yeah.
It seems that way on further reading and further interpretation that's the rules. Part of our problem is the fact we have a grass banking. And apparently under SPFL rules, you're not allowed to stand on a grass banking and they wouldn't allow leeway at any point. Now, obviously, we've managed to do it when there's been bigger crowds like Peterhead a couple of years ago when there was over 1,000 there and we had to stand on the grass bankings for safety reasons. Well, obviously, that was pre-COVID and everybody could just get piled in.
Yeah.
The stand, only being a 500-seater stand, can only accommodate something like 10%, which is about 50, 56 or something. I mean, even looking at other teams, I mean, Morton can only fit 500 and they are 5,000 seats. Dumbarton put up a tweet a couple of days ago and there's been no further news for Dumbarton about whether they're going to get fans in or not. Obviously, things through in the West are a bit more...
stricter.
It's probably a bit stricter, we're going to say, maybe a bit more fluid as well in terms of what you can do and what you can't do now. Obviously, with Glasgow staying on level 3.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, it would have been great to have fans there. I mean, but...
Didn't he try and butter it up or cover it up or whatever?
I'll not cover it up. It's absolutely shite we can't get there.
Correct.
Right, that's fundamentally it is. Fundamentally it is. What I was maybe going to say is that it might have been... with it being the first leg, it doesn't hurt as much, I don't think. Because if it had been the second leg, then that would have been a real kick in the balls compared to that. Or a bigger kick in the balls, maybe. I'm not particularly impressed with how the restrictions have went. Other clubs are obviously getting it. I'm not particularly impressed with the way the SPFL are with the stupid rules and grass bankings, but we've known that for a long time anyway. That's not a new restriction. That's not like a Scottish Government restriction or anything like that.
No, that's been there. That's like, I'm sure we've only had Peter. I'm sure it's only been open for Peterhead.
It was a cup game. That's right. It was a League Cup game, so it would have been under.
The rules are still different, though, for you playing in the league and playing in the cup.
Aye. I mean, everybody's quite frustrated. There was a lot of people having a go at the club on social media. I noticed it really isn't the club's fault. I mean, I can't stress that enough. You know, they've tried as best they can to accommodate anybody, even just season ticket holders, and it was a pretty much from what we can gather at a flat, it's not happening.
So so you've been really diplomatic, which I'm quite impressed with.
I am being very diplomatic at the minute.
You want to just speak to me and Ali and let me and Ali make an answer?
What we'll do is I'm just setting it up for you two to go on a big rant. I'm being Mr. Diplomatic. Well, you two can go as well as much as you want. That's within reason. I want nothing libelous on this podcast, right? Nothing libelous.
It's fair enough because Ali and I need to be diplomatic in our work, so you don't have to. So, you know, it's nice that you can do it. You're basically lining it up so we can blame somebody, aren't you? But you're not going to say it.
You can blame whoever you want. I mean, first and foremost, I'll be blaming the Scottish Government. Yeah. I mean, they're the ones that have got the restrictions. You even just need to see how they're reacting to, like, theatres and venues compared to... Yeah. Compared to England and all that kind of stuff. And I know Boris is a bit more kind of blasé about all than Sturgeon, but the difference between 1.5 and 2 metres indoors is a nonsense. I mean, it makes no difference. I mean, most places are going to have to close.
Well,
you know, I mean, you just need to see generally how football fans on the whole get treated and have done for years, regardless of what government it is, whether it be the SNP or Labour in the past or Tories in the past. And the only reason Boris, if I'm being brutally honest, is letting fans in is because he's a populist leader. He doesn't care any better. Yeah. Whereas if he was probably following the science like everybody else, he probably wouldn't have fans in doing there. No. But because it looks good for them, and because they're riding high in the polls, he just goes, right, let them in because it looks good for me. But anyway, that's maybe another issue. But there we go. Having a wee rant. Fire on, Renee. On you go.
I mean, I know the club's done everything they can, and I fully appreciate that, so I'm not having a pop at the club. But if this comes all come down to guys getting comp tickets, randoms being allowed into the game, maybe our tenants not being as welcoming and as supportive just because they're a shower of bitter bastards at times. Maybe that's it. You know what I mean? It would be as much as a lot of guys at Spartans have probably done a lot of good for us. There'll be a lot of folk that will be really, really bitter, but we've gave them league football. They always wanted league football down there, so they got it. Simple, you know what I mean? But I'm actually I think it doesn't help when we live in a country where, you know, it's, you're right. I'd be rather it be really strict and look after and have the preservation of life, which is what should be going through in a pandemic. And the boy down the road's just going, I'm getting votes, so I'll just let everybody in. I'm surprised didn't they try full capacity at Wembley the other day? Never mind, just 21,000. But to the same token, 8 of us, or 4 and 4 are going to be allowed to sit at a table in the pub together, a metre apart, in an indoor space, but we can't do it at a game of football outdoor. You know what I mean? It's like COVID's just attacking football fans. Now, I'm not one of these guys that doesn't believe it exists. You know, I'm not. I've not got my head in the sand with that. But, like, you're trying to tell me that it's not going to be a more of a risk for us sitting in the pub tomorrow against each other. Yep. Although we've been probably very, very, you know, coy with it and watch what we're doing and safe with it because we've all got different circumstances with who we live with or, you know, our medical conditions and stuff like that. But you try to tell me we wouldn't be safer sitting a metre apart at a game of football in a stand. You know what I mean? It's like, it just, the mind boggles. I think I'm more really annoyed that probably because I heard certain football managers and assistants were allowed into certain said games to watch certain lonely players at the weekend. And I was like, well, as much as a club has to keep up appearances with things and, you know, and keep relationships with certain clubs, but it's like, whether I do it next year or not, I bought a season ticket this year because I know I can watch 2 games at one time. But, like, I forked out for a season ticket. I would be expecting to get in front of the said other Premier League managers or that tin pot clown Doncaster that runs the league or any of his cronies. Do you know, it's like, it's something that you've came out with before and when you were obviously on your favourite TV show, The Terrace, when you'd done your interview.
Just for 2 seconds. For everybody that's listening, it wasn't me that brought up my television appearance. It was Rooney. All right. Just for clarity, I didn't pay him anything to tell you again that I was on the telly, but I was on the telly again, right?
If you watch it on YouTube, there will be a ticker going across the bar saying Bob said to mention being on the telly at this point. But you know, the Premier League, when you go higher up the league, you felt you're just a number, you know, you're a customer. That's, and I know the club has done what they have done and tried to do what they do, but that's where that comes, a bit of comes to, we're just customers now. They've got the money from us. And I know a lot of the Scottish government as well, and I'm not just fully having a dig at our club, but I'm having a dig at the tenants as well. But when said people are allowed into the ground before the home fans, then there's everything wrong with the game. And I've said this over the weekend that, you know, there's been a lot wrong with the game for the last 12 years and probably longer after what happened to Rangers. But if Doncaster's at that game on Tuesday, tomorrow night, and we're sitting in the pub watching the telly, I will not be happy that he's been allowed into a game before me. Gets $500,000 a year, does nothing for the league, never had a sponsor when it started. Boy's an absolute clown and a joke of a person and a joke of a guy, chairman or whatever he is, chief exec. And we're sitting in the pub. That's going to annoy me more than the COVID restrictions or our tenants maybe not being as supportive as they should be. That's probably as diplomatic as I can be.
And on that note, Alistair, what would you like to say?
Intrigued you what Rooney's definition of the word diplomatic is, because I don't think it's the same as mine if that was him being diplomatic.
This shouldn't be morning section. This should be the no filter section, shouldn't it?
I think for me, you know, it's either 500 sitting or 250 standing. Well, why? Like, I don't know. There's obviously no science behind that particular.
Part of the reason we've a problem, if I can slightly interject here, is to do there has to be like a red zone where everybody's the red, amber, and green. And the only place we'd be allowed to stand goes across the red zone. So that's part of a problem because of the way Ainslie Park is shaped. And because of the grass banking would be a green zone or an amber zone. But because the other end's where all the players are, that becomes a red zone. And that's why we can't go in that area to stand, which is a pain in the ass. But there's something I'll come on to once you're finished.
No, and I think that's going to, I mean, that's their specific circumstances. But the rule is still, obviously, it's either or, which I don't know the point. But kind of it's what it is. I think there are things that could have been tried to get fans in. I think, you know, we started talking about the potential of getting in for the last game of the season or for the playoff final a month or so ago when we looked at the provisional dates. This was, you know, when things were going well. So I think that things could have been looked at. You know, there's a testing centre, I don't know, 5 minutes walk up the road from me, just next to Easter Road.
There's one at Ainslie Park.
There's one at Ainslie Park for you. So, like, there's, you know, there is things that could have been done to allow us to get in. I think for me, it's probably quite a fitting, and assuming that everything goes ahead with Meadowbank and Tyne and things like that, it's quite a fitting way to end Ainslie Park. Just a damp fucking squib, really. And that's what it's been. It's been a horrible place to play. And look, we needed somewhere to play. It's fine. It's probably been a beneficial arrangement for Edinburgh City and Spartans overall as football clubs. It's not been beneficial for fans. Let's be realistic. It's been a horrible place to watch football. It's not in an area where, you know, it's out of the way. It doesn't attract any kind of casual support. It's, you know, people talk about it being the worst away day in Scotland, or certainly one of the worst, and that's just down to where the ground is and how soulless it has been at the ground. And I suppose it's because it wasn't ever designed to be, you know, a league ground. Spartans have different ambitions than us, I guess, certainly now anyway. So I think it's quite a fitting way that's how it ends at Ainslie Park, just with, you know, I was thinking we're going to get one last go in and then a couple of days later finding that it wasn't going. So we'd quite happily, now that we're not getting back to Ainslie Park, which was always tomorrow night, I'm quite happy not to go there again. I think that would be absolutely fine with me. But yeah, like, there's not, football fans are treated like shit in this country. You know, even look at the Scottish Cup final. And I know now things have changed and they're not getting anywhere in, but, you know, to not even look at changing the venue, because obviously, you know, they've gone about Hampden to UEFA to get ready for the Euros, but then to not even think about trying to find some other way to do it, and give what they're giving Hibs and St Johnstone 300 each. That's a nonsense. It's a total nonsense.
They did ask other grounds because they asked Hearts to move it to Tynecastle. And I think Hearts have said they're doing work on the main stand, i.e.
Aberdeen have offered. They also asked Murrayfield, but they've got a rugby tournament on, which you could have worked out probably by going on the SRB website. Almost looked like they were asking places that would say no, so they could have it at Hampden. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's other stadia in the country that could have quite easily have hosted enough fans for the Scottish Cup final, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't want to do that because, one, they have to kind of keep it where it is because they're so wedded to Hampden and they're so wedded to Glasgow.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously they did ask Murrayfield and Hearts, but I think they knew what the answer was going to be anyway. You know, I mean, there's other grounds that could have accommodated the Scottish Cup final. But again, that's where we go. And it's the same here. I mean, we're kind of left in a bit of no man's land because we can't really get fans in. Dumbarton might not even be able to get fans in. I noticed, because obviously I go to the Speedway, I'm a Speedway season ticket holder with Edinburgh Monarchs. We got an email through on Friday saying there's going to be a test event for Speedway on Friday, next Friday coming. But it's only the Monarchs are doing it as a test. It's not like a Scottish Government test event or anything. It's to test their own protocols to make sure it's COVID compliant. And it says a severely reduced capacity, but they've not said what the severely reduced capacity is. Now, what I want to know is how many people are going to get there? Because for the majority of where you are at Armadale, it's standing. But there's certain seated areas at Armadale as well. And I want to see if they get people into them seats. Because if that's the case, then they may have asked West Lothian Council for an exemption. And they went, yes. Whereas Movement said to Edinburgh Council, is there an exemption? They said, no. You know, so I don't know if there's maybe going to come into it. Because obviously, First Minister said in her update last week, you can ask for local exemptions. So I don't know if maybe that's come into play as well. And the council are like, I'm not having that at all. This is it. But then we could go to another, then maybe like Kelty with Fife Council are going to get, they'll get 250 fans, but they've got a seated area as well. Are they going to have anybody seated there? Who knows? But I think that's part of the problem. But I think, as you said, in terms of Ainslie Park, if I can be less diplomatic, I think it's really just a last fuck you from Ainslie Park. You know, nobody really likes going there. I mean, I don't think it's, we're not being disrespectful or anything, just nobody likes going there. You just go into like places like Pie and Bovril or go on Twitter or anything like that. It's like, I hate going to Ainslie Park as an away fan. There's nothing to do. There's nowhere to go. Even as a home fan, what you've got to do is you've got to go to Stockbridge for a pint or go up to the town for a pint and then get a taxi because it's so far away from everywhere else. You know, there's the closest pub is the Village, and that's overpriced and it's part of a spa kind of area. The next closest one's the Ducat, which probably wouldn't want to be going in. We were quite fortunate we had the local bowling club saying you could go down.
Aye.
But it's not really the same as going into a pub with your pals and kind of sitting there and having a gab and all that and just rocking it into the ground like we're going to do at Meadowbank. Whether that be we go to the Hopper, we go to Limelight, we go to the Belfield, Safari, wherever. Just a short walk. There's a lot better amenities for away fans as well, like we said in the last pod. So it's almost just like, well, you know, this looks like you might get promoted into League One. Here's your last hurrah. Thanks very much. And piss off. You know, I mean, as we say, Ainslie Park's just not a good place to watch football. I mean, the grass banking screwed us over for the league, which didn't really help. We could have stand in there. I think that's a ridiculously stupid rule. Apparently, it's to do with health and safety or something. But then you have other grounds where you can stand on like wet concrete or whatever and you can slide the boot. That, you can't be telling me that's any more safe than a grass banking because it's not. That's just rubbish, right? I mean, we've had plenty of games where we've had to stand at the back on the grass banking and there's been no injuries at all. In fact, you're probably more likely to get an injury in the crowd, in the stand with a big crowd because you can't move anywhere because it's so... Yeah. And you're packed in like sardines. I remember when Hendo scored the equaliser against Inverness and it was just like a huge big sway. I thought the stand was going to collapse. You know, there was that many people in it and there was that many people swaying about. I'm like, there's no danger that stand was safe for that amount of people that were there.
We were sensible that day. We were standing on the other side.
Well, I'd initially went in the stand because I'd been doing like a kind of mini hospitality day. And then at the second half, I came over to stand with you on the other side because I just felt a bit safer. It wasn't as crammed in, it wasn't as packed or anything, eh? So, I mean, for a small community club, yeah, it's absolutely fine for what you're wanting. If you're going to be playing league football for any amount of time, it's just not a good place to go.
I think it comes back to what you're saying about local councils giving exemptions and stuff. I think if the council had the way, our council is so, and I've had this discussion with folk in my work, who, you know, and I talk about like Glasgow getting treated different from Edinburgh and whatever, you know, it does to a degree. And but I think if our council had the way, Hearts, Hibs, Edinburgh Rugby would be based outside on the city, on the outskirts of the city, but everybody just travels in and travels straight back out. Wouldn't there be any amenities or anything that roundabout? Quite happy to have Scottish rugby. You know, I don't even know if they'd be happy having Murrayfield do this. You know what I mean? I think if they had their way, they would have all these things on the outskirts of the city. And everybody had to travel to it by car or whatever. No pubs or that about it. And then you travel back in. If they had their way, you know what I mean? Because it would just help with crowds and all that sort of thing. And I just think it comes back. I'm sure we touched on this in the last pod. I know we're moving back to Meadowbank and probably a bit because of the council being stuck with the tail between their legs because they can't finish it. But I just, you know, you're a sports fan. I know we're talking about football fans, I don't know, but you're a sports fan in Edinburgh. I just, the council are more concerned about shooting flats.
Aye.
And that's it. You know what I mean? They don't really care about anything else. We'll pay our council tax. We'll pay whatever we pay. You're in whatever band you are. Blah, blah, blah. Just give your money. And then, you know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. I'm going to. Edinburgh's a great place to live, and you only as somebody who lives in it, you don't appreciate it as much until you go away and come back and go, glad I did. You know what I mean? How much you've actually got. But to the same token, because you're a sports fan, you're treated as a. There's rugby fans, and then there's football fans, and then there's everybody else underneath. And it's
even on that note, like in terms of council exemptions, they kind of have a slight divert here. When I used to go to like the ice hockey, when there was four teams in the elite league, so there's Brayhead, based at the Brayhead Arena, or now Glasgow Clan, as they're called, Fife Flyers in Kirkcaldy, Dundee Stars, Dundee obviously, and Edinburgh Capitals at Murrayfield. At Brayhead, Fife and Dundee, you could take a pint to your seat and watch the game, which you're not meant to do at Sporting because of, you're not meant to have alcohol at a sporting event in Scotland. But there was council bylaws that allowed you to do that at those rinks. Edinburgh Council refused to do it in Murrayfield. They refused to allow it. So that'll tell you exactly how they thought sports fans should be treated. They'll allow it at the rugby, but they'll not allow it for anything else. They sometimes used to do it at the athletics when I was wee, when Meadowbank was there, and you still used to have like big meetings and all that kind of stuff. When Michael Johnson and all that used to come over and run at Meadowbank because it used to get sponsored by Miller. So part of that, the deal of you going there is you had to be able to sell the drink. A bit like when you have like a UEFA tournament, like at certain places, you have to be able to have beer in your ground and all that kind of stuff. But Edinburgh Council were just not interested. They're just not interested in doing anything like that. You know, there's not, like, you just need to see, like, they just need to sell. We're getting right off topic here, eh? But you just need to see how, like, they sell off, like, Greenland areas for kids' football and all that. It's like, where's it going? Like, we're talking about, well, not into this pod, but maybe do that in the next one. But the thing about Colts, well, part of your problem is that there's nowhere for kids to play. You know, you're kind of left to like places like the Spartans Academy, soon to be Meadowbank, these type of places. But if you've not got a lot of that, because Edinburgh doesn't have a lot of that, because they sold it all off for housing or other things, offices or hotels or whatever, what are you going to do? And again, I just think the whole thing's all kind of, I think with the pandemic's kind of shown, to bring it back a little bit, is just how short-sighted some decision-making's been in Edinburgh. And the way, obviously, the way we're not going to get fans in has kind of brought that home a little bit, that short-sighted way of how it was built, because it was the council that designed it, because the council owned it. You know, although the academy's got a long-term lease, it's essentially they're there for the council. The council have designed it, and some boy who's never set foot in a football ground in his life, quite clearly, or just sat there, you got a floodlight in the middle of a goal. I mean, come on, man. You know, you sit down, you've got a floodlight greeting you at a goal. I mean, that's just poor.
Well, we might have
poor design for start to finish.
We might have that when we go back to Meadowbank.
Yeah. Right, so I don't think it's going to be blocking a goal quite as bad as that at Ainslie Park.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a bizarre kind of. Even the stand isn't like centred. You go to the middle of the stand and it's not at the halfway line. which irritates me no end. I don't know if it's like an OCD thing or something, but even like at Tynecastle, like I think the new main stand isn't centred either, and that just bugs me no end. You know, if you're going to be in the middle of a, you know what I mean? If you have a stand that's the length of a pitch, you'd expect the very middle of the stand to be right at the centre, like the centre half, like centre line. You know what I mean?
I wonder if that's because they've made the home dugout slightly bigger than the away dugout and all that sort of stuff. Just
a
bit of one-upmanship. But anyway, well, that could be a different discussion for a different day.
Anyway, aye. So there we are. We're not getting fans in. Shite.
Ainslie Park. We're getting to the pub, which is great.
Come on, good to see everybody. I mean, that has been a nice part of the restrictions getting lifted. We're actually going to be able to see each other.
I know.
It's been difficult for a lot of us. Like, the restrictions have been pretty harsh on a number of us. Without me wanting to give, like, woe is me living on my own. You know, it's difficult for me to go anywhere. Yeah, I get the violin out, Rooney. But you know what I mean? For 7 months, because of the way the restrictions went, I couldn't see anybody for 7 months. You know, we went to the Belfield the other week there. That was the first time I've seen... Part of it bumping into Rooney a couple of times at the shops. It's the first time I've seen him in the flesh in like 7 months. If it'd been for bumping into him, it wouldn't have been that. It would have been Zoom calls for the entire time. And then I think, as I said on Twitter about the whole fans in, it's the hope that kills you, man. You know, it was like, yes, we've got it. We're going to get in. We're finally going to get in. Like, obviously, I know I've been there with official tweets, but it's slightly different. You've got to kind of sit on your ass, say nothing, and just tweet. Nice as it is to get into games, it's you're kind of working at the same time, so it's not quite as enjoyable as
having a
few pints with your pals first, going doing singing songs and making a bit of a noise of yourself.
That's what happens when you haven't seen folk for a long time.
yes, listeners, for those who might not watch the YouTube, that's our bill for the Belfield, which is
table number 28, 20 pints of Pilsner, one craft lager, 16 pints of Lawless, one tap water.
Not me.
Sensible, whoever that was. Well done.
I think that was shared between the four of us.
No, it was not shared.
Was it not?
I did not have a drop of that.
One packet of cheese and onion crisps, which was
Rooney
all mine.
Rooney had to soak up the booze.
And three dark and stormy cocktails, which
were absolutely minging.
Rum and ginger beer.
Oh, they were disgusting.
Was my mother-in-law there drinking the darkest stormy cocktails? That's the only person I've ever heard that drinks. Oh, wow.
Absolutely disgusting.
Well, yeah.
But that's what it is, listeners. That's hopefully going to be our new haunt before we go back to Meadowbank. So there we are. Anything else you gents would like to add? A bit of a shorter pod than usual?
Just seeing the pub in 23 hours or something, or 22 hours.
22 hours.
22 yes.
Hours.
Aye. Counting down.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
No, I don't think I've got anything to add. Just
we've had more rants. We've had another go at Ainslie Park.
Hopefully we'll never.
And had another go at the Scottish Government.
If we ever go
anything
back
else? To... Anybody if else we'll ever go at?
No. If we ever go back
to... Boris Johnson, that covers that.
If we want to go back to Ainslie Park ever again, it'll hopefully spank them in the Scottish Cup. But apart from that, agree with Ali. I'm gutted I can't go, but if I never have to go there for a home team game ever again, I'll be delighted.
Aye.
Obviously, probably best to add good luck to the team for the next two games.
Aye.
I'm a bag of nails already. I've been absolutely bag of nails since last Tuesday. I pretty much can't really think about anything else. I've been trying to do as much dissertation work as I possibly can, just try to gather sources and things, just to keep my mind off it, but it's been an absolute nightmare. So, pub tomorrow. I hope all the citizens who watch it remember it is on BBC Alba. If you're in the UK, you will find it on the iPlayer if you're not in Scotland. If you are abroad, you can buy it on ECFC TV, unless you use a VPN or something, get around it and watch it on the iPlayer. which I'm assuming a number of people do, as I've already been told from relatives that live in America. But there's your two options, BBC Alba. I'm actually delighted we're on the telly. We generally perform quite well on the television. I've done the last two times. Just a bit unfortunate, as I had a wee go today. Let's maybe wrap up the show, have another rant. The Scottish Premiership playoffs are on the same time as we are on Thursday. I mean, who organised that?
That'll be that.
Like, I understand the delay, everything, like I think it was 48 hours so fans could get in. why can you just delay the Premiership players for another 2 hours, like 2 days? You know what I mean? It'll come after. You're still going to be playing the game after the Scottish Cup final anyway. It doesn't matter. Just delay it by 2 days. That means you can have all the games on TV like they do in England with Sky when they have the Championship playoff, League One playoff, League Two playoff, and they're all on the television one after another. Why can we not do that? No, SPFL towers, as per, no forward thinking, no bothering, doesn't make a difference. As long as we've got our money in our back pocket, there we go. Doesn't matter about the wee teams. Well, they can just bugger off.
You're obviously not being asked a live tweet tomorrow, so...
Well, I know what the answer's going to be at that anyway.
Maybe ask said people that you know at the club if they can have a word with Neil Doncaster and go, look, son, you're not getting paid enough to organise this correctly. You didn't do much else, so you've made an absolute tit in the TV coverage of the playoffs. He's obviously wanting more money. Obviously, $500,000 is not enough for him to make an absolute hash of Scottish football.
I just couldn't believe it. Because I heard that I was watching it. There was an advert for it, and it was like SPFL playoffs on Thursday, Premiership playoffs. I was like, did I hear that right? We're playing on Thursday. Why are they the same day? And then it was confirmed last night. Dundee put a tweet up. It was like Thursday at like 8:15. So you'll get the first half of your game, but you'll not get the second half. So if it's a really tight game and it's really exciting, you're going to have to make a choice between what game you want to watch.
Well,
we
can go to the pub and we can have more than one screen on.
No, I want every screen to be Edinburgh City so everybody can.
Yeah.
There'll be no watching horses in the background or anything else for that matter. It'll be City on every single television in that pub tomorrow because they're the only team you should be watching. That's what I'm going to say to that.
you can have a word with the manager when you go in.
Right. But anyway, yes, we're on BBC Alba, folks, as we said. BBC Alba, ECFC TV, if you're abroad. If you can do, obviously, please contribute to the club. There'll be programme, I'm assuming, tomorrow as well. So get that. You've got an online one. Alex done another great job with the programme this year. Still reasonably priced, still looks pretty good. Unfortunately, see your beautiful faces at some point. This wee advertisement for the pod, so thanks, Alex, for that. Aye. I think that's me done. Right, are we definitely done this time?
Yeah,
that's all for me, aye.
It's going to be a quicker pod as well, eh?
I know.
No, like the last week was an hour and a half the last time because we're on the run. You couldn't stop because we're too busy morning. Anyway, right. So good luck to the team in the morning. Everybody will be behind you. I'm assuming the garage crew will be there making announcements of themselves as loud as they can be, I hope. I believe there's certain things planned. I dread to think what that's going to be. But good luck to them. Good luck to the team. We're all rooting for you. I think we just need to go out there and do it. Eh?
Yep.
Definitely do it.
Right. So from that, it's a good night from Mr. Rooney.
Good night. Stay safe.
Goodbye from Mr. Moncrief.
Cheerio, everyone.
And it's a goodbye from me, the Right Rev. Goodbye.